Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. On April 26, 1986, shortly after 1 in the morning, Reactor 4 at the Chernobyl nuclear power complex experienced a sudden and catastrophic power surge. The accident set off a series of explosions, a fire, and released massive amounts of radioactive material into the environment. Within months of the meltdown, 28 workers died from radiation poisoning, and more than 350,000 people were relocated. Over the ensuing years, related deaths have been harder to pin down, with estimates ranging from 4,000 to more than 200,000. 28 years later, it is a tourist destination. George Johnson recently visited Chernobyl and its surrounding villages and wrote about his trip for National Geographic magazine. George, what a pleasure to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
So when did Chernobyl become an official tourist destination?
Well, people had been allowed to go there on officially sanctioned visits, you know, with guides who were, you know, trained in radiation danger and had monitoring equipment. But it was really fairly recently in 2011 that the Ukraine government decided to really get behind promoting tourism or at least, you know, making it a more popular activity and just, you know, making it known that people could sign up for tours with official tour groups and get on a bus in Kiev and head out there.
How much does it cost?
Oh, they vary a lot depending on whether you go for one day or if you do what I do and spend the night there at Chernobyl, which is a story in itself. So, you know, it can go up to, you know, hundreds of dollars for a couple of days.
So these are private tour operators, government tour operators?
Private tour operators, although the guides themselves that work for the companies are also employees of the government, and they're trained in a special program. You know, they're very knowledgeable about the science and the history, and they know where not to let people go.
Well, has it been popular as a tourist destination?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, Disneyland or Yosemite or anything, but the tours do get booked. You know, they can get booked far in advance. When I was there, it was really just in the early weeks after the uprising in Kiev, when they overthrew the existing president and he fled the country, and then in the Crimean Peninsula was just being occupied, and so as a result of that, the tour companies were kind of begging for tourists because people were hearing all of this, you know, alarming news about Ukraine, which of course has gotten only worse since then.
But, what a time to be there.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about the tour itself. I mean, can you walk us through it a little bit? Were you outfitted with hazmat suits or given any specific...
Yeah, no, nothing like that. I mean, they tell you to, they recommend you, you wear good sturdy shoes and long pants and long sleeves and don't eat the mushrooms. That was one of the, you know, they mushrooms concentrate... biologically concentrate radionuclides, and, you know, as if we were going to eat mushrooms, and you know, not to smoke or eat outside or just anything that might make it easier for radioactive dust to get into your system. But, you know, basically just, you know, common sense precautions like that. We were we had our own personal little Geiger counters, electronic dosimeters that we could use to take readings and then see, you know, where the hot spots were. It almost became kind of an informal contest to see who could measure the highest dose.
Were there any disconcerting readings for you?
Well, I mean, you have to put it into perspective. I mean, this is such a tragedy, and the Chernobyl workers who were there on the front lines, the firemen and later the liquidators, they got exposed to just deadly, sickening amounts of radiation, and radiation of that level is measured commonly in a term they call the sievert, S-I-E-V-E-R-T, and what we were measuring were micro sieverts, so millionths of a sievert, and I took out my Geiger counter on the flight over there, and I measured how much radiation was coming into the airplane mm-hmm. from, you know, cosmic rays at high altitudes. And the readings I got there were higher than what I read in most places in Chernobyl, mm. although there were a few big exceptions.
Wow, that is stunning. And of course, you, as you said, you know, radiation took a terrible toll on yeah. human beings exposed to the fallout. But what about the environmental toll? Are there visible effects of the degradation?
Well, not really. I mean, any effects are very subtle, which is a huge surprise. I mean, one that's not subtle are the, they call it the Red Forest, and it's, you know, these large pine trees that just kind of died and turned orange, but you know they were very, very close to the reactor. But one thing that's so surprising is you get there, and you know I think before I knew anything about Chernobyl other than you know vaguely remembering the original news stories, I would have assumed that it was kind of a wasteland. But you get there, and it's a verdant forest of birch and pine trees, and it's burgeoning with wildlife. And there are, you know, ecologists are studying the effects of the radiation, and there's really two main people doing this, and they have opposing views. And, you know, one report seeing evidence of micromutations, but, you know, things you have to look pretty hard to see. And then the other team is not really even finding that. I mean, there's cases like birds with hooked beaks and things, mm-hmm. but you know, you really have to look. It's really amazing how well, these smaller animals particularly have been able to adapt.
Yeah, you describe it as quite a lush and pretty landscape, which is officially open to tourists in 2011. And were people visiting illegally before that? Was that possible?
Well, yes, they were. They were before that, and they still are, because, you know, it's much more exciting to sneak in. Now, people climb over the fences or get underneath them, and you know, this is like about 1,000 square mile area that's cordoned off in Ukraine and in Belarus to the north, and people sneak through the fence, and they call themselves stalkers, mm-hmm. and the name actually came from an old Russian science fiction story, but and you know they just kind of for years have taken this great pride in secretly exploring Chernobyl and hiding from the guards.
Looking for a new travel destination that isn't overrun with tourists? Well, try Chernobyl. Our guest, George Johnson, is a journalist and science writer and wrote about a visit to Chernobyl. His article and some striking photographs of his visit are in the latest issue of National Geographic magazine. Well, I remember reading at the time that there were many people who didn't want to leave the area, and you discovered that there were people who did stay, that were living there.
Yeah, they came back, and they're mostly very old now. We met an elderly woman in her 80s in one of the little farming villages. Now, this was in the part of the zone, as they call it, the zone of exclusion that was, you know, quite a few miles away from the epicenter of the meltdown, but you know, still measurable amounts of radiation above normal background. But she just insisted that she was going to go back there to her farmhouse and grow her potatoes. And when we talked to her, she, you know, she was just saying, "Ah, radiation, you know."
Wow.
Why am I going to worry about radiation? I'm 80 years old. I'm not going to have children. It's invisible. And she went into talk about what a problem the Colorado potato bugs were.
Well, I know you're a science writer, George, and an intrepid sort. But what do you think? What do you think draws people to these sites?
I asked this Chernobyl stalker that particularly. Why did he keep going back? He said he'd been there about 100 times, and there was just something about this quiet, empty beauty, and just the fact of in trying to imagine. You know, like the city of Pripyat, which was once 40,000 people just a couple miles from the reactor, and now it's abandoned high-rises. And he described it sort of as a sick fascination, but I don't think it was really, really sick. It really inspired him to learn the history, and he really empathized with the firemen and the people who went through this horrible tragedy. And I mean, he'd heard about this accident since he was a child, and this was kind of his way of coming to understand how such a thing could happen and how people behave in extreme circumstances. For other tourists, the people on the bus, there were two young men who were working on a theater piece about what they described as the concept of quarantine.
Huh.
Sounded a little abstract to me, but and you know, they thought this was research, and then there was a young man from London who just decided he was going to spend his vacations doing what he called extreme tourism, and he had a next plan was to go to North Korea.
Well, I guess he's hitting him, but towns further out from Pripyat, you know, this surrounding area remain abandoned. What is the status of cleanup efforts there?
So the reactor that exploded, they covered, you know, very hastily right after the accident with concrete and steel and just anything they could drop on it, at great danger to the workers, but, you know, it had to be done. And they call that the sarcophagus, perfect yeah. name. And except that's, you know, kind of crumbling and leaking a little, and, you know, they're afraid that, you know, I mean, it's not going to last as long as the half-life of the nuclear material in the reactor core that still remain there. So they're building a large dome, or actually an arch, that kind of swoops over and keeps any radiation from going beyond the roof.
Wow, just a sort of shield on top of everything.
Yeah, shield. Yeah. It's a huge, impressive, you know, feat of engineering.
Yeah.
And they have to build it slightly away from the reactor on track, so when it's done, they can then slide it into place. But, you know, the deadline keeps getting, you know, moved further into the future. And even then, you know, plans are that cleanup will continue, and they will try to slowly dismantle the core of the reactor and move it into some kind of, you know, safer nuclear waste disposal. But that could be decades.
Well, George Johnson, a whole entirely different side of Ukraine. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
George Johnson is a journalist and a science writer. His article, The Nuclear Tourist, is in National Geographic magazine. You can read an excerpt of his article and see some of the striking photos of his visit to Chernobyl. That's on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.